Okay, I think we can start. Pretty many people are already in another room, and I do not think we'll have many more people, as we received apologies from Martin, Diane, and David, because I think that's exactly who we're missing. So we can start. So I'd like to start by wishing you all a happy new year. If we look back to 2016, I think we did a lot of very good things. And looking forward to this year, there's still a lot of things we need to do. And so I'm very happy to see so many of you on the call ready for action. So I hope that everybody who's on the call is already in a double room. Let's start with our agenda. You see it in front of you. So guideline on the CTSO Council practices. As you remember, we agreed to send it to the council. It has been done. No comments were received from the councillors, so apparently there's nothing to so we do not need to temper with the draft. So I think it's ready to be sent to the community. So if there are no more objections from the group, I will forward the guideline to the community and give them 2 weeks' time to provide their inputs. I do not actually expect so many comments. I hope that there will be no many comments for us to on this particular guideline. Next one, and that's a difficult one. It's empowered community-related guidelines. Stephen has prepared slides and a very long speech to brief us into what everything he did. And believe me, that's a huge amount of work. Okay, so Stephen, the floor is yours. I hope you had a power nap and now you're ready for action. Yes.
Actually, I didn't have a power nap, although I was trying. And it's not that long either, Katrina. So Happy New Year, everybody. Afternoon, wherever you guys are, morning, et cetera, et cetera. I just want to give you a bit of an update on this stuff because, as you recall, our last chat, I'd hope to have a document completed and perhaps even a draft of the guidelines, but that has not happened.
I'm sorry, Stephen, could you please speak a little bit louder, at least for me?
I'm using a new computer here, so I'm not sure. I don't even know where the microphone is on a Mac. So I went over to the dark side and got a Mac. As you know, I spent a lot of time trying to sort out the council decision-making timeline constraints, which I reported in my last update. And once I got that, I turned my attention to Annex D, and which actually is the procedures in the bylaws for how to implement all this stuff on that. And that caused me to shift gears. If I can have the next slide, Kim. So I spent a good part of the break carrying out in-depth analysis and translation of Annex D. Annex D is extremely dense material. I'm about 70% of the way through it at this point, and I'm trying to restate it in language I understand and also noting inconsistencies here and there as well. But I have gotten through the first article, the second article, and I'm halfway through the third article, which is about removing board directors. Next slide, Ken. So I'm trying to focus on capturing both what we as the CCNSO, as the decisional participant, need to do and also what the ECA needs to do, being the CCNSO's rep on the ECA. I feel it's important that I get a handle on its requirements and obligations as well, because the ECA is central to shepherding through any petition that comes from a decisional participant. And we've got to have our act together, and I would say the ECA does not have its act together at this point. So I'm trying to capture that as well. As noted, the language is really dense, and it's just taking a lot of effort to try to sort it all out. And you can see from the slide there with regards to Annex D, it is intensely detailed. It's about 34 pages, I think it is. Next slide, Sam. So what I'd like to do is walk you through it in brief, give you an overview of Annex D and what our empowered community rights are here. We basically have, there are four sections of the document reflecting the four major sets of rights that we as the empowered community have. And the first is approval actions. These are actions the ICANN board does something, but they actually need our okay before it goes into effect. We also have what are known as rejection actions, and these are things that ICANN does, and then they turn around and say to the community, okay, we've done this, and now you have X number of days to object, and if we don't hear any objections, it goes into effect. Then we get into the stickier stuff, which is recalling the board members and spilling the entire board, and one would hope we don't go down that road. And then the last and even worse scenario in my book is when everything has completely fallen apart in the relationship between the empowered community and ICANN. And ICANN's calling for mediation, and it just, if we ever get there, we're not in a good place at all. The important thing to keep in mind with these procedures that are outlined in Annex D is that they have a lot of time constraints. There are things that have to be done within 20-day periods, and then the ECA has things it has to do within 24 hours. And the takeaway from all this, really, is that things, what I would describe as tilted in ICANN's favor, because the failure of any, either the empowered community petitioner, decisional participants, say the CCNSO or the GNSO, or the failure of the ECA to meet one of these deadlines causes whatever petitioning process is underway to come to a halt and ICANN prevail. And I'm not saying that's wrong. I'm not saying it's rigged, as popular here in the States these days to say. I'm just saying this is the way it is, and we have to be very cognizant of these timelines, and this is one of the reasons I spend so much time scratching my head over our decision-making, where the council makes decisions and tosses stuff back to the community for final approval, because it's not clear in some circumstances that council can act quickly enough to meet these deadlines. So it's something we have to look at a little bit later. Next slide, if I could. Approval actions, this is, I expect, will be very rare occurrences. They only kick in if the board makes changes to a fundamental bylaw of the corporate articles or wants to sell some major corporate asset. I don't expect that we'll be seeing many of these at all. I have written John Jeffries actually and asked him if he anticipates any coming up. I haven't heard back yet, but I sincerely doubt we'll be seeing many of these, certainly not in the near term. Next slide, please. Rejection actions. There are 10 operational actions that the EC has rights to review. Examples, the ICANN budget. We also have the right to review and reject operating plans, strategic plans, the IANA budget. And there's a bunch of other stuff that will come up irregularly. But what I would like to point out here, I think this is where most of the action is going to be, because a lot of these things we have the right to reject are recurring events. The ICANN budget cycle is what it is, comes up every year. Same with the IANA budget, the same with the strategic plan and the operational plan. So my feeling here is this is where we're going to see a good bulk of the action. Next slide, please. The next major section is direct removal. There are different procedures and requirements based on the type of director. If it's the director that came from the nominating committee, there's a distinct set of procedures to be followed, as opposed to the removal of a director that came out of a supporting organization or advisory committee. And the spilling of the entire board is yet an even more convoluted set of procedures that need to be followed. And as I say in the slide, let's hope we never get that far. And last but not least is recall the entire board. And that's even, next slide, Kim. And mediation stuff is if the ICANN board refuses to do something that we have told them to do as a result of exercising our community powers. So if we tell them we want a director off the board, for example, and they refuse, this is where we get into mediation, community IRP, and stuff like that. And if we ever got that far down the road, we would really be in a pickle, I think. I think we will fail in our mission on that. Next slide. So my take on all this, because this is just so much material that needs to be put into guidelines that we need to prioritize, and my suggestion is quite simple, is that we split this thing up into separate guidelines based on the four major sections of Annex D that describe our empowered rights. So I'm suggesting here that we consider a separate guideline for approval actions, for rejection actions, for director and board removal actions, and for the mediation community IRP stuff. Next slide. And I'm proposing that we focus, or I focus on Ben and I and whoever else wants to focus on the guideline for rejection actions. And the reasons that are stated there in the slides, these are things that we're going to start seeing sooner rather than later, and it's things that are going to come up to us on a recurring basis. The budget cycle, for sure, the operating strategic plans as well. And I really feel it's important that we, as a decisional participant, have in place procedures to deal with this stuff soonest. And I also feel the ECA has got to have its act together as well to get this stuff going. And given that the ICANN fiscal year next year is we're halfway through the current one, we will be seeing stuff pretty sooner rather than later, and I really feel this is where we need to focus. So that's it for me. Any questions?
Thank you very much, Stephen. Not only for this presentation, but also for everything that you're doing with Annex D. Martin, please.
Thanks so much, Katrina, and thank you, Stephen, for all that work to help us try and focus on where we're going. By the way, I'm actually getting some echo, so I don't know whether somebody's got their microphone open. My question's actually quite simple, I think. Whether the answer is, I don't know. But right at your start, Steve, you made mention of the fact that you get down in the process to some very, very short deadlines for response. Is that something that applies for those mechanisms, or are the short response times very specifically aimed at certain ones of those modalities that you've just run through? Thanks.
Those deadlines are applicable across the first three, particularly with regards to the second, which is rejection petitions, and the third, which is director removal petitions. Generally, there is a 20-day limit from the time ICANN says, we've adopted this budget, you have a right to reject it, you have 20 days. So the community has 20 days to get a petition, and then that second 20-day period starts where the community has to go and solicit other supporting organizations for their support, schedule a community forum on the rejection petition, hold the community forum within the 20-day period, or elect to kick it down the road and have the community forum at the next ICANN public meeting. So there, at that point, you can stretch it out. That also applies for direct removal. It's the same kind of thing. 20 days to get some support, hold the meeting. Direct removal is even crazier because you have to schedule, we're obligated to schedule a meeting with the director that we want to remove and try to sort it out with them. Whatever the complaint is against that director, try to sort it out before our community forum is held, et cetera, et cetera. But all that has to happen within 20 days. So there are actions where they're rather tight time periods where a lot of stuff has to happen. And the ECA is involved because it's responsible for directing ICANN to hold a public forum, get ICANN to get organized to do the public forum. There's also a possibility of a teleconference call being held before the public forum, all within that 20-day period, for example. And that teleconference also applies to rejection actions as well as board member removal actions. Acceptance actions have a 30-day window. So ICANN says, you know, we've done this and you have 30 days to approve it kind of thing. So, but yes, no, they're fairly consistent in their time frames, and there are sequences where a lot of things have to happen in a very short period of time.
Thank you, Stephen. Martin, does that answer your question? Okay, Martin,
yes. I've decided to stop typing and talk. Yes, Katrina, that was actually a very useful and very helpful response. So thank you very much, Stephen. If I can just sort of recap to make sure I have fully understood the ultra-tight deadlines that you mentioned, are where you've got several steps within that 20-day period. And that, I think, helps us, certainly helps me understand the real value of splitting into four discrete elements so that we can then see exactly what it is for each one of those elements that needs to be done in each of those windows that open up for us. I think basically I'm supporting what you've said, and I just want to be very, very clear in my mind that when we come to those four elements, what it is we're going to be doing differently in those four, and I think you've actually highlighted that for me. Thank you.
Okay, good, Mark.
Okay, thank you. Regarding Stephen's proposal to concentrate on the guideline for rejection actions, I see Ben's support in the chat. Are there any objections? I think this is a fair proposal, and perhaps this is really the one that we should address first. Martin also supports that. Seeing no objections, I think let's concentrate on rejection actions now. How can we organize that? Simon, would you have the first draft or outline for the guideline, and then the rest of us can just join in, or you would propose some other route to this guideline? Stephen?
This stuff is amenable to flowcharting, actually. And I've started a flowchart on the rejection action stuff. And as I go through it, I'm coming up with a list of questions that I think this group needs to consider for example, the acceptance of a petition. If one of our fellow CCPLD managers is having issue with an ICANN budget proposed ICANN budget, for example, and they file a complaint to council, what form, above and beyond what's specifically called for in Annex D, what additional requirements do we want on that petition that comes before council, because we don't want to have council dealing with frivolous petitions, whether council should accept it with a simple majority vote, or should that be a supermajority vote of some sort? In other words, should there be a higher threshold to deal with the petition from the community or not? I can come up with about 20 questions in short order and that kind of stuff, which I will circulate what I've got percolating in my head to this group here shortly later this week. And, you know, at that point start giving some thought to that. I think getting a flowchart complete, because I've gone through the rejection stuff now twice, is going to be a fairly straightforward process, and I can see getting at least an outline to this group by the end of this week or early next week. And certainly we should have something to discuss at our next meeting that's much more concrete than what I've been able to present today. That answers. I was close to answering.
Yeah, thank you. So, good way forward, and I see in the chat window Ben volunteered to help you with this first step. Okay, so thank you very much. So if there are no more questions, comments about this part, we can move to our next agenda item, and that's Citizens of Council Election Guideline. Alejandra kindly put it into Google Docs. So Alejandra, maybe you can give us a brief intro, anything you spotted, something that you'd like to highlight, or anything else you'd like to say about this particular guideline, just to trigger the work on it. Yes, please.
Okay, thank you, Katrina. Well, the guideline was uploaded into a Google Doc by the end of November. It has very little review so far, beyond make one comment regarding self-nominations. And through the weekend, Yoke did a more thorough review. So I would ask her to tell us about her comments.
Absolutely, Alejandra, thank you. So indeed, I had a look at this this document and compared it with the election report that was prepared for the regular elections during the last round at the end of 2016. There were some issues identified during those elections and some advice formulated. It would be very helpful if this advice was taken into consideration in the revised version of the council election guideline. So more in particular, there are issues regarding the timing that is currently included in the guideline. So if you look at heading number 3, there it says first and foremost that the election manager should be appointed no later than 1st of August each year. If you look at what happened in 2016, there was no council meeting in August, and the first occasion when the election manager was appointed was at the September council meeting. So there is a question whether we should reflect actually the timeline as specified in the bylaws, or if we should adjust it and put it more in line in how the CCNSO currently works. The same applies as well for the same comment applies to a bit later on when we speak about the timeline of the election. And then secondly, regarding the call for nominations, the template, there are a few suggestions that could be made to the template in order to make it a little bit clearer. There was some confusion during the last election round regarding what needed to be included in the templates, mainly because in one particular field we were asking both for the CCTLD and the region of the nominator, so if we could actually split this up in the template and make it a little bit clearer for everybody that fills out a template. And then, very important, self-nominations. So this is currently not addressed in the guideline. However, it is something that comes up, I understood, also during past election rounds. So it would be very helpful if the GRC and the council could include a principle with respect to self-nominations either way in the council election guideline. And then lastly, a comment regarding CCNSO membership and who is eligible to nominate or to vote. There's currently a reference regarding the fact that you need to have applied for membership in order to be able to nominate or second a candidate. I was wondering if this should be adjusted into whether the CCNSO membership should be effective at the time of nomination or seconding, or whether the mere application is sufficient. I'm scrolling through the document, and I think that those were the major comments that I had. I'm happy to hear comments on the floor. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. Are there any comments from the group? Well, I have one. Well, it's not exactly a comment. It's I just realized that as far as I remember, we haven't asked for preliminary comments from the community on this guideline. I think we asked about liaisons and travel funding. So perhaps the first step would be to ask people to comment on the current version of the guideline. So, okay, today I will send out the mail to the community about this guideline and about the council practice. Okay, and which actually reminds me that we need to keep track of all the actions we've performed in respect to the guidelines somewhere in Wiki, because otherwise we will just forget all the stuff. So, Martin, I see your hand is up.
Thanks, Katrina. Yeah, I had two comments on that. Well, actually one was a question. The first one was the last point that Yoka raised, which was about whether an application in the CCNSO was enough to entitle somebody to vote. I found that sort of a little bit surprising, in that normally voting is, and here I'm sort of talking of excluding the CCNSO, but really as a sort of principle, you're allowed to vote in a club, in a society of some sort, because you have been accepted as a member. So I wondered what the implications in this particular case would be if somebody has applied for membership but that has not yet gone through. Have there, for example, been cases where people have applied for membership and then subsequently not followed through and joined as members? If we can sort of deal with that one first, and then I'll come back to the other one, which is very much more true.
Okay, thank you, Martin. Well, the current wording says that the CCNSO member must be a member before the call is open. So, chat window. Yes, in the past we've seen that cases when somebody applied for membership during the call for nominations period, and these even if they are accepted as CISNETO members, they are not eligible to vote in the current, not vote, but nominate, or actually vote too, nominate and vote in the elections that are running. That's the current procedure, and well, perhaps that it should remain the same. I don't know, but Martin, I don't know if I answered your question. Of course, well, it's not about if CCTLD is accepted as a member or not. It's even if they are accepted. If it happens during the open nominations period, they do not nominate and they do not vote, only in the next election. Yes, Martin?
Yeah, thanks so much, Katrina. That's actually very, very helpful and explains the basis of the current phraseology. And I think probably that phraseology needs to be quietly in the guidelines, doesn't it? My other point was the very first point that Yoko raised, which was it the very first? Well, early on, when she made mention about under 3.1, where it's no later than the 1st of August each year, and then subsequently under 3.2.1, the appointment of the election manager should be made at the June meeting, which was well in front of the August date that she mentioned. So I got a little bit lost as to, firstly, if we're saying that it should be at the June meeting of the CCSO Council, why we're actually making a date quite as late as the 1st of August each year, and secondly, why there is that sort of 1st of August each year when we're actually looking at the June meeting, whether that is actually just something to do with the administration within the CCNSO Council, or whether it's just a fallback in case the CCNSO Council has to push it back for written procedure. It's just that I find it a little bit confusing when we have two similar dates for what sounded to me like the same process. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Bart, I see you want to address this question. Bart, unmute if you're muted.
Here I am. Yes, this should work. Now, I've got a new phone system and it doesn't work properly yet. I think what say the whole timeline. Can you hear me now? I hope. Yeah. I assume you can.
Yes, I can.
That the whole timeline issue, I think, might be, I haven't read it lately, but needs to be readdressed to insert and to ensure that the whole nomination and election procedure is geared around the ability for the community to for a Q&A session at one of the face-to-face meetings. In the past we had some issues and we needed to be very flexible in our interpretation to ensure this would happen. And to the ability for the community to, for a Q&A, drives the timeline and therefore the appointment of the election manager, etc., as well. So maybe it's an idea to review it from that perspective and adjust all the timing around the ability for having a Q&A and having candidates available for the general council elections at the annual ICANN meeting. So then we're still in time for the normal appointment in March. Thank you.
Thank you, Bart. The only question, I was reading bylaws and I forgot to pay attention to this particular issue. At some point, I think I had a feeling that we are supposed to have new laws on this annual general meeting, right? But I used to believe that the annual meeting is the first meeting, but I think it's the last one, no?
Yes, this is Bart again. So if you look at the bylaws, I think it is written in the bylaws that the new council will take their seats, or new council members take their seats at the end of the annual meeting, ICANN's annual meeting. And ICANN's annual meeting, or the AGM, is the October-November meeting. However, this was in the bylaws since day one, and since day one, the CCNSO, for whatever reason, has accepted and has, the new councillors took their seats at the first meeting of the year, so that's the February-March meeting, as will happen in the upcoming meeting. So maybe either we need to adjust this, and this is, for next year, or we include something more or less as an agreement among council and its members that they interpret the bylaws of meaning the first meeting of the calendar year to avoid any confusion around what time the general council elections need to be concluded.
Yeah, thank you. I think that's what struck me when I was reviewing the bylaws. Personally, I think that we should follow the bylaws and have our councillors in AGM, which is in October, not March. Which means we have to, at least once we'll have to run elections earlier than expected. We used to. What do others think? Should we just continue as we're used to and have our Q&A session at the AGM or let's just... Okay, Martin, and please unmute.
Thanks, Katrina. I hope I am unmuted. Yeah, I think I agree with you that the bylaw process should win. But I suppose really my question, therefore, is that the process itself should require the Q&A session at the face-to-face meeting before the ICANN general meeting. So that people can then be in a position that they are making their vote, which I suppose is either June or July time, isn't it? That seems to me to be the sort of logic of what you're saying. Can you confirm that that is what you're saying? Thanks.
Thank you, Martin. Yes, absolutely. It should mean that we hold a Q&A session at one of the meetings. The problem is that second meeting of the year is the meeting, but it's supposedly a smaller meeting. And we still do not know what we're going to do, how the CCMSO community will, well, how we will meet during this B meeting. If it's going to be a reduced meeting, so probably at some point CCMSO members will not be interested in going to these meetings. So that's what worried me, if we have at June-July meeting. Bart, I see your hands up.
Yes, this is Bart, more wearing a devil's, being the devil's advocate. I understand the need to stick to the bylaws. At the same time, from a pragmatic point of view, since day one, ever since the CCMSO was created, councils have been appointed at the March meeting. We all know the CCMSO is not sticking to the bylaws itself. In recognizing this and making this part of the guideline explicitly, probably you've resolved a lot of issues, because if you don't, going back, it's more weighing in on the Q&A and the importance of engaging the community in the selection process. And this is probably, you talk about the first or second half year of the fiscal year. Normally the election starts in the September time frame. If you would stick to the the bylaw timing, you will run into the seasonal holidays in July, August, and the major gap between the June and October-November meeting. So it's, more from a practical reason, and also allowing members and engaging, during the June or the November meeting with the candidates, that you could stick to the current time frame. But that's more a practical reasoning and avoiding too many changes at this stage.
Thank you, Bart. Yes, of course, we should take into account all this practical aspect. And holiday season is a very practical aspect. I can vouch that people, it's really a quiet season. We need to get rid of Iana stewardship. But, we can solve it by doing it even to some even earlier moment. So we can have a Q&A and elections during and after the first meeting of the year. So, personally, I'm in favor of sticking to the bylaws. Yes, the CCMSO is interpretation that we apply to the bylaws is rather frivolous, but perhaps we should start behaving. I don't know. I see in the chat window Ben, and do we need to change the bylaws then if we decide on practical grounds? It's not so easy to change the bylaws, I think. Yeah, this is one of the things that we need to think about, and I agree, it could be difficult to get people to vote during summertime, at least in the northern hemisphere. But again, we can start the process earlier in January, February. There's other sections in the bylaws which are not followed literally. Yeah, that's true, yes. There are. So any other comments? I see somebody maybe could speak up, not type. There's multiple attendees are typing. Yes, Martin, yes, but it might be a question on legitimacy, absolutely. But as long as we have somebody on board. So I think it would be better from all different perspectives to have at the end of the AGM. If somebody unmuted wanted to say something.
Yes, this is Bart again. Let me rephrase it. Start again. I think the legitimacy is
Bart.
Yeah, can you hear me?
We can hear you, but you sound as you're talking at the end of the tube with a plastic bag on your head.
It
was okay before.
Oh, then I don't know what happened. I'll type.
Okay, we'll have to. Okay, Bart is typing. Head in his pillow. Yes, could be. Yeah, maybe you fell asleep, Bart, and that's why you cannot hear you properly. Okay, Bart agrees that accountability and legitimacy are important. Good. Good start. Okay. Meanwhile, perhaps we can talk about travel funding guideline. How far are we with that one? Okay, while we're... Jokke, please.
Hi, Katrina. Jokke here. I had another look at the travel funding guideline based on our conversation during last meeting, and I hope that I reflected all comments that were discussed last time. So first of all, the structure of this guideline was revamped a little bit in order to make it a little bit more clear and logical, I hope, and also to avoid duplication. So we moved the definition of what CCNSO travel funding actually is up, and then started talking about the CCNSO travel funding committee. So I'll wait for the document to be displayed in the Adobe room. Yeah, I think you can all see it now. So there are a few things that still we need to look into that need to be resolved. And that's mostly about chapter number 5. Could please scroll down. So the CCNSO from the travelers. There was an extensive discussion on this chapter last time as well, and there was an agreement that we should not use the phrasing other eligible parties, but replace it with CCNSO community. That was a suggestion. However, I have a concern that CCNSO community refers to CCNSO members and not to the broader CCTLD community, so the non-CCNSO members, which are actually also eligible to apply for travel funding. So if we could perhaps rephrase this into CCNSO and broader CCTLD community, or just limit it to community instead of CCNSO community. And then 5.2, we listed those who fall under this category of CCNSO community or community or whatever phrasing we will decide on. Number 6 covers the expression of interest to receive CCNSO travel funding, so first the one by the councillors, which is slightly different than the one that applies to the community members. The timeline, there seem to be no major issues regarding the timeline that was suggested here. And then a chapter was added regarding the application assessment and the decision-making process, putting here the selection criteria. So Alejandra has reviewed this section extensively and made a proposal regarding how to help the CCNSO travel funding committee members to make a decision regarding the eligibility of those applicants that put their name forward. Alejandra, if you underline, perhaps you would like to clarify a little bit on what has been added here, if I may give the floor to you.
Sure, Yoke, no problem. What I did was evaluate the documents that we had for the ICANN Fellowship Program and then try to take whatever would be useful for us and place it in these documents. So let me see, we're on 6, right? So, well, that comment for the CCNSO counselor is not what I meant. It was more on the other eligible parties and then the reorganizing of the information was to see what is what that we are looking for if we are on the committee to see the travel funding. For example, it says, should the applicant be granted CCNSO travel funding, the applicant is required to agree to. And then those things can be used later to assess whether the committee can grant another funding next time if the applicant actually met these requirements. For example, actively participate in the CCNSO session, fulfill the task committed. Maybe some will make a presentation or other things. And have the have the traveler's name published. It's something that they should agree on. But later, let me see here, number 7. That's where I was aiming for, the selection criteria. So there were some criteria already mentioned. I just tried to keep it as less subjective as possible. Here there is a table that was sort of transferred from the fellowship webpage, and it says there the criteria to be elected, it should be that the applicant expresses financial hardship, the applicant is a council member, speaker, presenter, session chair, working group member, liaison, observer. So it's clear who can apply. Also, here, that this is important part, and I remember Diane also mentioned it, that returning applicants have fulfilled the requirements asked in previous CCNSO travel funding. Travel. So in fellowship, you are required to assist to mandatory sessions and you are required to write a report in the end. So maybe something like that can be added there so the committee can review someone who's already been funded and see if they deserve another funding opportunity or not. Also, I don't remember if it was in the guideline. The applicant has not been funded more than twice in the current fiscal year, but I do remember that this is something that's been asked at a point in the form. Uh, and of course that the applicant makes a strong case whether why they want to go to the CCNSO meeting. I'm not sure if I should go on or if is that what you wanted me to talk about, Yoke?
Hi, Alexandra, Yoke again. Thank you very much. That was exactly what I was hoping for. So the criteria has been further refined based on actually what the fellowship program dictates on the applicants.
Yes.
Regarding the decision-making process, there was a question regarding why there was reference to regional liaisons. So this was actually the regional vice president from the global stakeholder engagement team within ICANN that could be consulted in case of questions regarding the applicants. And moreover, there was a comment by Martin regarding what happens if a candidate does not fulfill the conditions. Does it allow us to reject any future applications based on this initial application that did not meet the requirements? So there's a few comments that are still open when you look at the Google document for the travel funding guideline, and it would be helpful if we could have some questions answered so that this guideline can be finalized as soon as possible. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Joke and Alejandra. Let's do it like this, that we have two more weeks to go through this document in hope that we will spot something that needs to be changed and have some new version by the next call. Okay, so thank you. Going back to the previous council elections document. So, going to chat window. So Bart agreed that accountability and legitimacy are important, but that does not mean that you need to follow the bylaws literally as long as all agree you divert. Well, that's a nice twist, meaning members and the council, meaning that we agree on the interpretation. And Stephen noted that any deviation needs to be explicitly laid out before the community, however. So, that's about this. Okay, if anyone has something else to say, then you can do it now, or we can do it online about discussing the next version of the document. And again, let's have two more weeks to think about this document and comment online. Agenda item number 6, it's about the CCNSO guideline on liaisons. On 19 December, I forwarded the latest version to the to the mailing list. So please have a look at it by the end of this week, so by 15 January. If there are no other comments from the group, then I'll forward it to the council for to give them a chance to comment. And if there are no comments from the council, then we will send it for public comment to the business members. Okay, if there are no questions about this, then number 7, it's issues encountered with respect to our guideline on specific review teams. As you know, we have this guideline developed and adopted by the council. And according to the bylaws, and interpret it as you wish, but the bylaws say that all these specific guidance on the selection process in respect to these specific review teams is provided within the operating standards developed for the conduct of reviews under Section 4.6 of the bylaws, and it's called the operating standards. There are two specific reviews launched, or kind of launched. The first one was on security and stability review. The call for volunteers was launched under the old bylaws, and the selection of members or participants to these teams were done according to the new bylaws. Well, a little bit tricky, but now there's another call issued, and it's on Registry Directory Service, who is yet another review on Whois. And the call has been launched according to the new bylaws already. However, to my knowledge, there are no operating standards developed yet. Today I sent an email to Karen from ICANSOF asking for the draft on these operating standards. No response yet, of course. Oh, it's really just, I don't know, 6 hours ago. So there are no, as far as we know, there are no operating standards yet. So maybe we will have to change our guideline as well, because according to our guideline, we are the ones who launch the call. Currently, it's ICANN that launches calls for volunteers, and then they send it to us, and the council reviews all those the names of those who are seeking for the endorsement from CCNSO. That's something that probably we'll need to address in the future. But again, as I mentioned, no operating standards in place as of yet. Any comments? Bart, would you like to comment anything on that? I see you wrote something in the chat window, but I suspect it's still about council election guidelines. So if there are no more comments.
Katrina, is this better? Is this USA sound? Is this, an aquarium?
Well, you're still at the end of the tunnel, but at least the bag has been removed. So try and speak, yeah.
My comment was, so by version of bylaws and practice, say, if you look at the new bylaws, you want to fill the bylaws, there are two areas already where this diverts. First of all, the directory services review should have been launched by the 31st of October, which it isn't. And secondly, the operating standards should have been in place in consultation with the community, which has not happened. So just to allude to the point around the council elections, where it became standard practice, and I'd say an agreed standard practice, just to show the difference.
Okay. Thanks. If there are no more questions, let's move to the next agenda item. Is any other business? Any other business? No? Then regarding our next calls, as you may remember, our brave support of the Secretariat will be in the LA in the coming weeks. So our next call is in 3 weeks, not in 2 weeks. 3 weeks, it's the end of January, same time. And then another one in 2 weeks' time, in 13th February. Anything you would like to Okay, Martin will not be in February with us. Yeah. You should warn us closer to the date because we'll definitely forget and we will be waiting for you and not be able to start our call. Okay, so, we will not forget you. We will forget that. On the contrary, we will remember you and we will be waiting for you. So, if there are no more comments, questions, suggestions, then again, thank you very much for joining the call. Thank you for your hard work, and see you in 3 weeks' time. And again, have a great, successful, and fruitful new year. Thank you, and bye-bye.